Well, I have to say, this morning on our way over here, Joyce and I were driving up here, and she was telling me the story of a woman who had been studying or practicing in a cave for 13 years. And after she came out, she still wasn't hopeful about humanity. And I have to say, seeing all you here today practicing is an act of hope. I mean, just your presence being here in the Zendo and being willing to practice. So thank you.
Thank you.
So recently, I was planning a talk on the secrets of the Bodhisattva with regards to mind, thought, and consciousness. And this comes from the Samda Nirmo Chana Sutra. It's a sutra that is a series of question and answers between a bodhisattva and the Buddha. So in this one, Vishalamati asks the Buddha, what and how are the secrets of the bodhisattvas? How is it that the bodhisattva is wise with regards to the secrets of mind, thought, and consciousness? And, you know, the Buddha is really pleased because the Buddha knows that the question was asked for the benefit of all beings. So he's very willing to respond. And he begins by informing all present about mind, thought, and consciousness. Mind, in this system, is a mind, thought, and consciousness is from the Yogacara system. So it's about 4th to 6th century, and the teachings are considered the third turning of the wheel. Wheel of Dharma. And what is particularly interesting about this sutra is that it really helps us to understand about, you know, what we're really up against in terms of our structure as human beings. So how does the mind, thought, and consciousness work? And what are the secrets? So for mind, mind is considered the essence of everything, the basis of everything. And it's also known in Yogacara as the storehouse consciousness, which contains the seeds of becoming. In the storehouse consciousness, in that idea, there's certain predispositions that are present. Predisposition to verbalizations. In other words, the fact that with our minds we see objects, we label them, and we have symbols. And so with this predisposition, you can see where we can have some issues. There's also a predisposition to apprehending a self. And we all know this is, you know, having a self is needed in functioning in everyday life, but it can also, if the ego is too much in control, it can be problematic. So that's where we see the problem with the way we, as humans, will have a tendency to separate ourselves from everything that is because we see a separate self. Then there is also another aspect in mind, which is called appropriating consciousness. And appropriating consciousness is linked to our senses. And this is the aspect of mind that is the grasping aspect. And it also has the ability to expand. So if you have some sensation coming in through hearing or through your sight, that aspect of mind, appropriating mind, will grasp at it and then develop it. That's how we find ourselves in mind streams that we don't, you know, we all of a sudden stop and catch ourselves and say, well, how did I get here? Well, it's because appropriating consciousness heard something or saw something, felt something, and grasped onto it and then developed a story around it. And before you know it, you're in Kansas and you don't know how you got there. So that's just the first aspect of mind, mind itself. Then there's a second aspect of mind, thought. Thought is the locus of fantasy. And it's also the place of the identity maker, the ego, of I, me, and mine. So now we have all of the mind, different kinds of storehouse consciousness. We have appropriating consciousness, and now we've got the ego, and we've got fantasy. Okay, what's left but our consciousnesses? We have six. We have all the senses, the five senses plus mind. And the consciousness are linked to the senses directly. So that's the essence of, you know, what these secrets are about, because what the Buddha is telling us is that this is what we're working with. This is the stuff that is the material that formulates our everyday life. So in considering this kind of information, I had also found within that same folder, as I was doing some research, there was a koan called Yanshan's Mind and Environment. And I thought, how is that? How does that tie in? Why is that in the same folder? So some of you know I have been studying koans with my teacher, Diane Martin Roshi. And we had actually been studying Yan Chen's mind and environment. And I thought, this could be interesting. Yan Chen, well, I should back up a little bit about koans. So the Sangha Nirmochana Sutra is about 4th to 6th century. Koans, in their present-day form, were developed or came to a more stable form around the 11th and 12th century. So now we're going to fast forward to our Chinese ancestor and see what Yanshan has to say about mind and environment. With koans, the title is very important because it sets the stage. So we already now know something about the secrets of mind, thought, and consciousness. And those are three aspects of mind. So think about that information is now part or subsumed under what Yanshan thinks of as mind. So we had more detail in Yogacara. But now Yanshan, as a Zen adept and master, is going to have a conversation. He's going to have a dialogue with one of his students. That's what koans are about. They're about exchanges between teacher and student, and they're considered public cases, which means they're applicable to each and every one of us. No one escapes. This material is all about us. So when we go through it, which I hope you will also think about and share how it is showing up in your own life, because the images that are presented are just every, you know, are images we're familiar with. Some of them are from nature, from stories, but they're really just metaphors for what's going on in our life. So maybe you can come along on this journey here as we mutually examine Yanchan's mind and environment. Joyce is going to pass around the introduction and the case. So this isn't the complete koan. There's more to it in the Book of Serenity, but we'll start with these and see where it takes us. Let me get it. Okay. Does everybody have enough?
No.
Okay, let's see. I'll pass this one around. I don't know if I have extra. So you might have to share, if that's okay. So we'll have somebody who wants to read the introduction. Well, if somebody reads it, you'll kind of all kind of get the hang of it. Somebody, will somebody volunteer? Cliff?
I'll be happy to.
Thank you. Okay.
The ocean is the world of dragons, disappearing and appearing. They sport serenely. The sky is the home of cranes. They fly and call freely. Why does the exhausted fish stop in the shade and a sluggish bird rest in the reeds? Is there any way to figure gain and loss?
Thank you. So, what do you think of those first two lines? We have the ocean is the world of dragons, disappearing and appearing, sporting freely, serenely, and then the sky is the home of the cranes, as they fly and call freely. Those two lines really differ from the images of the last exhausted fish and sluggish bird. So if we think about the images, ocean is often used as an image in Buddhism to describe and be a metaphor for oneness, for emptiness. We talk of the ocean as being oneness, and all the waves on top are the thoughts, so we can say this is the ocean, is like our mind, serene, and the waves on top, of course, are the thoughts. So here we have dragons just disappearing and appearing in the ocean. Does that resonate with anybody? Can you have a sense about what oceans, with the dragons in and out in the oceans, what does that mean? How does it show up for you if we talk about it being a metaphor? Yes, Lance.
Well, it just be manifestations coming from mind, coming here.
Appearing?
Permanent appearances coming out of mind, came to mind.
Yes, yes.
Dragons, also I know, are symbols of kind of the mysterious aspect of reality. They're like, and they always play this role, kind of magical.
Yes.
Wondrous.
Yes. Well, it is quite wondrous, you know, when you think about what happens in the process of awakening, or as we become aware of our true self, what happens in that, and how insights that we may have as we're practicing, how insights kind of appear, and then they disappear. We have, so our process of awakening isn't, okay, one day you're not here, and the next you're a fully awakened being. Doesn't work that way. Things are appearing and disappearing for us. And some insights stay with us and we accumulate. And we're considered, this awakening process is just that. It's a process. So, thank you. So what about the sky being the home of the cranes? They fly and call freely. Sky and crane. Sky is, I think, the character, the Chinese character for sky is also the same as emptiness. So again, we're coming into oneness. So this imagery is also, cranes are very favored in Asian culture. They speak of longevity. They are, I think they mate for life. There's probably much more cultural influences in the meaning of cranes than I know of. But we can see how being able to fly in the sky so freely is liberating. Any other thoughts about cranes in the sky?
They fly higher than any other birds.
Oh.
And they are connected to heaven in Chinese sense.
Mm-hmm.
They fly higher than any other birds. They travel through the cloud. So they're not limited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, contrast that to the fish. The poor exhausted fish that is stopped in the shoals. So what about in our own practice? How is it that we sometimes stop in the shoals? We don't use the word shoals for ourselves, but we would say, well, I'm going to hang out at home. I don't think I'm going out. I'm not going to go. I'm not doing this. What is it when we're exhausted? How is it when we're exhausted? What is the mind state of that experience, just like the exhaustion?
You're another part of it. You're another part of the ocean. You're afraid of the water.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to hide in the cave.
Yes. Hide in the cave, yeah. That's one, yeah. How about others? Are you ever exhausted? I don't know. Life is exhausting. I can't believe, no. I get exhausted. So I think we all have the experience of actually pulling back from life, from retreating because of our fears or our obstructions, our mind habits. Any of those could be reasons why we've pulled back. So the image is there to really instruct us to wake up to how this is affecting our lives, how our situations in our own life exhausting us. And what about that? Yes?
On the other hand, if the fish doesn't rest in the shoals, if the fish tries to stay in the ocean, it just becomes terrorized by that freedom, and there's no way to deal with the freedom, for instance. So the shoals are kind of safe harbor for a little
mm-hmm.
while.
Yes, it's also that we don't, if we take this time in the shoals, we're actually coming back, which is the natural order of to avoid, the extremes that are associated with hanging out in emptiness or hanging out in everyday phenomenal thinking, just kind of. So we want to have the balance. And so your point, Jerome, about us resting in the shoals is important because it does help us renew ourselves and maintain the balance that we need. Thank you. So how about our sluggish bird in the reeds? What's that like? Any thoughts? You're awfully quiet. Are you there? So, when you approach a con, you just think about, what does the word mean in my life? Have I ever been sluggish? What mind state was I in when I felt this heaviness or sluggishness, and I needed I observed that in myself? What is that state like? And how would we say that the causes and conditions of our life are contributing to that state? So we always look at where we are in any given point in time. Sometimes we're exhausted, sometimes we're sluggish. Sometimes we fly freely, and other times we're just, you know, soaring with the dragons. This is all of our life. It's no different. Each one experiences life in its ups and downs and myriad expressions. So koans are a way to help you examine those aspects of your life and see if you can relate them to the metaphors without too much trouble. But the big question that is presented to us is there any way to figure gain and loss? Gain and loss, you know, is one of the pairs of the worldly concerns. There's, I think, a like and dislike, shame and blame, and I don't know, there's one other one. Anybody know the four? Oh, praise and blame, fame and disgrace, like and dislike, and then we have this one, gain and loss. Gain and loss is, you know, gain is a big word in Zen. You know, we always talk about no gaining mind. Can't gain. But yet, here we are, all practicing. So there's a difference between gaining mind and about to practice for the benefit of all beings, about to awaken. We need that. But in terms of sometimes gain and loss, sometimes we could think about, well, is what we're doing, are we really gaining something? Are we losing something? You know, sometimes in one instance it looks like we're losing, other times we're gaining. I mean, that's the human condition. We split reality into gain and loss.
Good and bad. Is that real?
Is that real?
Yeah, should we care?
Should we care? About, we'll say more about that. What do you mean?
Is gain or loss real? Or is that just a mind reflection that you created out of the real world?
Yes, bingo. Yes, it is a fabric. Because it's always situational, it is a fabrication of the mind. It is like how we're perceiving reality at a given point in time. Mm-hmm. So to be alert to what happens to us when we attach to something as gain or as loss, then we are off on a mind stream and we're back in Kansas again. So, you know, how do you deal with that one?
I think at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. But we are still living in the real world, in the physical world. Mm-hmm. So still we deal with it.
That's right.
At the end of the day, it doesn't matter. So sometimes mm-hmm. it matters in the real life, but it's not necessary to become a determining factor of what you do or how you be.
Mm-hmm. Gain and loss. I think we still get up in the morning and sit our zazen and continue to practice.
What does this mean, figure with this? Does it mean distinguish gain from loss, or does it mean to figure how gain and loss factors into our life?
Well, there are probably multiple ways you can take it. How did you take it when you first heard it?
I took it as the first distinguishing gain from loss.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much whether gain and whether the concept of gain versus loss is relevant to us, but
mm-hmm.
I took it as the first one. Maybe something appears to be gain, mm-hmm. but it's loss, and something appears to be loss, it is gain. It's
mm-hmm.
not always
clear. Right. It's not always clear. You know, and the fact that it's almost a moving target every time you, you know, set up your scales, it's like, okay, where are we today? So in this case, I think we have to keep in mind with koans that there are layered teachings. So today you may read it this way, and then if you read the same case or introduction tomorrow or a week later or a year later, you may have a different understanding. And that's what's so rich about these cases, these stories, is that they're there to unfold along with us, as because there's something in here. Every word is significant. And sometimes we're not in a position to really penetrate what is being said. So we're clueless on a given day, and another day, you know, all of a sudden, we're pretty smart cookies. So try for yourself as we go through this, and not be too hard on yourself if you don't figure it out. There isn't an answer book to the koans. I know that they've been selling them in Japan, I heard. But you don't need them, because all of the wisdom you have is right within yourself, if you just rely on it. So let's try now the case. Anybody want to... We have some time yet, so anybody want to read the case? Here's the... Yes, go for it, Ying.
Yangshan asked the monk, "Where are you from?" The monk said, "From Yu province." Yangshan said, "Do you think of that place?" The monk said, "I always think of it." Yangshan said, "The thinker is a mind, and the thought of is the environment. Therein are mountains, rivers, and the landmass, buildings, towers, halls and chambers, people, animals, and so forth. Reverse your thought to think of the thinking mind. Are there so many things there?" The monk said, "When I get here, I don't see any existence at all." Yangshan said, "This is right for the stage of faith, but not yet right for the stage of person." The monk said, "Don't you have any other particular way of guidance?" Yangshan said, "To say that I have anything particular or not would not be accurate. Based on your insight, you only get one mystery. You can take the seat and wear the robe. After this, see on your own."
Well, there's a little bit of humor in that one, I think, but there's also a meaningful exchange that's going on. Whenever a teacher asks a student, "Oh, where are you from?" Generally, it's a question about where are you in your practice. And often we'll find in other koans the question will come up and the answer might be with regard to the teaching that the student was receiving at a prior monastery. Sometimes a teacher will tell a student to go study with Tiantong or go study with another teacher because they see that that person maybe has an orientation that might benefit from this teacher's style. So asking where a student is from is one way to find out and assess where the student is. In this case, you can see that the student is still thinking about his home from Yu province, right? He was a pretty honest guy, right? "I always think of it." Got to give him 5 gold stars for that, and being right in front of the teacher. But Yanshan's very compassionate, and he responds to that equally in terms of his honesty by saying that the thinker is the mind and the thought of the environment. So it's an encouragement to remind the student that, you know, here you are thinking, but remember you're here now, and all of this other stuff around you is the content, can be the content of your life. So if we look back into Yogacara, when we were talking about thought, mind and thought and consciousness, now we have mind saying, mind is, Yanshan is telling us, mind is the thinker. So in the course of how many centuries, we have another explanation of a relationship between a person and their environment. If you recall, Dogen's another century later, he comes onto the scene about 1250 or so. So he's in 13th century. And we are all probably familiar with his words of, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. Right? So how do we do that except within the realm of where we are in whatever we find ourselves? So Dogen also had used the phrase about how we practice zazen with thinking and not thinking. And when asked about, well, what is non-thinking, he says going beyond thinking to non-thinking. So all of these words are really not to confuse you. Trust me. They're here to help instruct and help you realize that we're humans and we have faculties that have certain tendencies and predispositions. And so in thinking about how are we functioning in our life, it's important to remember that and recognize that we do get caught in our hindrances. We do get caught in grasping. We do get caught in attachments and aversion. This is all what happens to us. But there's also a path to liberation. And the more you know about yourself and the conditions of your life and how you are conditioned to the point of where what brought you to a given moment, that can help liberate you in the same way. So we're not separate from our environment, but we can turn around the light and shine within and learn about who we are and who is this true self. What is this true self that is in each of us? We are all fundamentally sharing that same essence of reality. And so in order to reach that state, we need to work within the constructs of our environment, of our own conditioning, and actually start seeing the mind habits that have been developed over the years. And when we recognize them, observe them, and then let them go, that's a critical point in this teaching. Because we get beyond, in order to really move as Yangshan, who says, well, you know, we have the stage of faith here. We know that, you know, if you've reached a certain state in your meditation practice, that is the stage of faith. But actually, there still is more, the stage of the person, which is the stage of no words, where you're experiencing your true self. And you're soaring freely, like the dragons, and going in the clouds like the cranes. And as Joe would say, we need to rest in the shoals and then come back and soar again. So this is how we can do it, by just being attentive. Sometimes as practitioners, especially in Buddhist practice, we have so many tools we can call upon. We have mantras. We have, besides our sitting practice, we have mantras. We have chanting. We can engage in prostrations as we did during the service. And then there's the just this practice, to bring yourself to the present moment when you're caught in an emotional state or some other hindrance or obstruction or gross feeling, to remind yourself, just this is it. This is it. There is no past. There is no future. It's only this. There's also, as it is, practice. So that means, well, instead of wishing something were something or wanting something else, whatever is presenting yourself is as it is practice. And they're good reminders. They're just phrases, but they can remind you when you find yourself caught in some mind habit, a mind stream of that takes you down emotionally or physically or mentally. Rely on your practice in these ways. Some people journal as a practice. These are all tools for us, and we can use them just like we can any of the sutras. But we have to make the effort. That's what Yangshan says. He says, you can take a seat and wear your robe, but after this, you're on your own. That's it. I can't awaken for you, but you can do it with all of these tools. They're there for you. That's it. Do you have some questions? Or are you confused? No?
I like the CCF practice. I think it's going to be very useful.
Good. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, I'm curious about that phrase, thought of. What is the thought of?
So, thought of could be when you've separated yourself. So now you're objectifying reality. Mm-hmm. Now it's subject and object, right? Yeah. So the thought of is the objectification. You know how one experiences when you're in the zone. We know what that means, right? And if you're in that mental state, mm-hmm. you're not thinking about what you're doing. It's not the thought of at that point. You're in the doing. You're in the experience itself. You're experiencing reality.
So the thought of would be the object, the thought would be the thoughts about the object is
yes,
and then the thought of would be the thought that is the object that represents all, the object.
Right, it's right, because in thinking we're when we use thoughts that we apply to objects like the landmass, mountains, rivers, or whatever, yeah. Zafus, we are imputing or we're attributing something to that. We're putting something on top of reality. We're assigning attributes. We might say, oh, it's too soft, it's too hard, it's too tall, it's this, that. Those are all attributes instead of the direct cognition or the direct experience of what it is, what is. And that's back to as it is practice. What it, when we talk about as it is practice, it's before we start labeling it or counting it or, you know, making up a story about it. That's all before.
And then we work on it.
Then we work on it. Then we work kind of, you know, kind of reel it backwards, yeah. Yes, Doug.
So in the introduction it says, is there any way to figure gain or loss? And then I like how Yangshan says, when you start thinking about the thinking mind, what do you find? And he says, I find it. And it's like, so there is no gain or loss in that. Mm-hmm. There is, you are left with nothing to strive for, to understand, nothing to, it's pretty, so go figure it out. And without anything, any other particular help other than take your seat and wear your robe.
That's right.
Which is actually a huge help.
Yes.
That is some guidance right there.
Yes. That is it's a wonderful statement to say that I have anything particular or not. So the use of the word the not or no the in any kind of context here in Zen always has an additional religious meaning. Looking back earlier today, we chanted the Heart Sutra, and there's just like lines of no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no sights, no sound. Same thing. When someone says, uses no, what are we talking about? We're talking about where there's no differentiation. We're talking about oneness. Because reality is both differentiation and oneness. There's no separation. We just do it in our mind. We have this tendency to be dualistic about everything, gain and loss, right and wrong, ultimate and conventional. But actually, reality doesn't exist that way. But we don't always remember that. So the use of no, when you see a no in front of anything, no, at that point, recognize at that point, who's ever writing this or communicating it to you, they're taking you into oneness, into emptiness and suchness, and go for the ride. You'll be happy you did. Any other questions?
Well, no questions, but with your permission, I'd like to share some voice about this.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think the what I like to share is one of the Zen phrase that I like all the time. And in Chinese, it's really short. It's called Yun Zai Tian, Shui Zai Ping. And translation will be the cloud in the sky, the water in the bottle. So it's very highly relevant to, similar to this, that they are, first, that they're actually the same thing. You just transform in between. in, you know, some, and also it does not stay all the time, right? The water and the cloud essentially are the same thing. But really, you know, some are cloud flying high in the sky and feel free, and some are waters that are constrained in the bottle. But it's not, you know, necessarily always the case. However, again, there's no guidance. You know, someone want to be the water, someone want to be a cow, some, you know, figuring out what's the transformation in the between. So the reason I share it is very highly relevant to the case study we have today, but the reason I like it is because of that. I think that it's about self-awareness and self-discovery, so I'll leave it to you to think about it more.
Thank you.
Sure. My pleasure.
The bell rang. It did. Should we chant out?
Sure.